Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hot Tag Show. You are listening to us on www.goec.net. I'm Ed Kelly and I'm always joined by...
Adam Stephen Kelly.
Okay, welcome again. We have an action-packed show for you this week. We'll be looking at the review of the two main shows, which of course is WWE Raw and also TNA Impact. We'll also have a preview of next week's Survivor Series and looking at what we can expect from that. And also we're looking at tonight's TNA pay-per-view Turning Point. We'll also be answering the weekly questions in the mailbag. And also we have a competition for you this week.
Yeah, we'll be giving away a copy of WWE 13. So listen out for that a bit later on. And of course, you've been hearing quite a lot of us recently because we had our last official episode 2 weeks ago, obviously. And then we had our video game special. So kind of linking into our video game special tonight, today we'll be giving away a copy of WWE 13.
Excellent. Of course, if you missed our special, you can still go to goec.net and you can probably find it under the archive shows on there. Okay, we're going to start our weekly roundup with WWE Raw. And this week, Adam, there's quite a few changes regarding what could be for next week's Survivor Series. For example, The Miz has had a fallout with Team Punk and he won't be with them.
Yeah, and Team Punk is no longer Team Punk. A lot of changes this week. Raw was live on Monday from Birmingham, England, which is also the site where SmackDown was taped on Tuesday. WWE, of course, doing their European tour, and they're already in England for the second time this year. And yes, The Miz decided to drop out of Team, what was originally Team Punk, by having a bit of a falling out with CM Punk and Paul Heyman. And later, Team Punk would become Team Ziggler, as Dolph Ziggler was made the team captain. Wade Barrett would later take The Miz's place. And yeah, CM Punk is now out of the team because he's defending his WWE Championship in a triple threat match against John Cena and Ryback. And yeah, a very noteworthy episode of Raw because, I mean, so many changes on the Survivor Series card, and it is only just... It's just 7 days away from today. Obviously, WWE didn't have faith in a show without a WWE Championship match and a show headlined by a tag team match. So I guess that shows you how much faith they have in tag team wrestling. But yes, CM Punk will now be defending his WWE title and a big shift in the main matches.
Definitely. Let's look about talking of CM Punk. He was in action this week in in tag team competition. WWE Champion CM Punk tagged up with Dolph Ziggler against John Cena and Ryback, and they were defeated.
Yeah, Ryback finally got his win over CM Punk, one clean, hitting the shell shocked, and Ryback pinned Punk. So will we see Ryback defeat Punk at Survivor Series? I don't think so. I mean, I think his time. You know, I think that if he was going to get the title this year, I think he would have got it at Hell in a Cell. Since they didn't decide to go with him then, I don't think he's going to be getting it until next year, if indeed he does get it. I think it's too late in the year now with the Royal Rumble coming up. Punk versus The Rock, as The Rock is going to be at the Royal Rumble challenging for the title. Punk versus Rock is the money match, not Ryback versus The Rock. I don't think many people want to see that.
Right, Heath Slater defeated Jey Uso, which... I still can't get excited about Heath Slater, I'm afraid, even though he's now part of the three-man band, part of the one-man band. This was a very run-of-the-mill match, Adam, this one.
Yeah, I'm not much of a fan of the three-man band. They're just kind of... just three people put together who WWE really has no clue what to do with. I mean, you know, Heath Slater was kind of just sort of fun in a really goofy way as the one-man band. They don't have a clue what to do with Jinder Mahal. And he just looks really out of place there with his, you know, being a rock star with his thick accent and his turban. And Drew McIntyre is a bit of a Scottish rock star in the mix. But they don't, you know, Slater is the kind of leader of the band. And I don't know, just have to see where they go. I mean, it's early days yet, but it just seems a bit of a weird... combination.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he did pick up the win, and I suppose this week, which he's not really it's one in the win column for him. He's not got many in there, so he's slightly improving in that respect. Okay, a homegrown favourite this time in the next match, and was Wade Barrett. He defeated Brodus Clay. Obviously, not very often Wade Barrett's going to be a fan favourite, but over in Britain, he certainly is.
Yeah, he got a massive reaction from the crowd. The crowd was very much alive on Monday night, especially in segments like the Vicky Guerrero AJ scandal thing, as that was continuing in a segment that, you know, a storyline that isn't kind of the best storyline we've seen in recent memory. But the crowd were actually very, very hot for that, and just shows you that, you know, you get a crowd over in England, because the show obviously is only here twice a year. The TV tapings, you know, the crowd's that much more alive. But yes, Wade Barrett was basically a babyface in this match, and he got a massive reaction from the crowd and a victory over Brodus Clay. And as we mentioned, he's now going to be in the Survivor Series match on Team Ziggler. And I think him replacing The Miz is, I think that's a good move, because, you know, Barrett's on the up. I think in terms of 2013, he's going to be in the World Heavyweight Championship picture, which I think is a good thing, because I think Barrett's good.
Yeah, I think he's definitely be a player in the next few years. He's he's certainly got the ability. He's also got the look as well with him, and he did have quite a big push, obviously, with the Nexus angle last year, and probably, you know, the year before as well, wasn't there? It was a couple of years ago now he first came with the big angle, wasn't it?
Yeah, Nexus was 2010.
Yeah, so he's a couple of years he's been on the scene now, and you know, someone that's come into the Nexus and still be around and headlining shows he has, you know, got some attributes. Right, the Intercontinental Champion Kofi Kingston defeated Alberto Del Rio.
Yes, bit of an upset as the Intercontinental Champion defeated Del Rio, distracted by Randy Orton. Randy Orton's music began to play, and Kofi Kingston rolled him up from behind and defeated Alberto Del Rio. Orton and Del Rio are in the Survivor Series tag team match. Of course, they had their match at Hell in a Cell, so things are still, you know, this feud is still continuing, and it looks like it's going to perhaps culminate at TLC, I think, because, you know, they're not obviously going to have another one-on-one match at Survivor Series, but they did have a Falls Count Anywhere match in Birmingham on SmackDown.
Yeah, I mean, these sort of feuds, I mean, it's coming to the end of the year now, so perhaps WWE might try and, you know, end the feud this year as such, and you start fresh next year with other angles.
And begin the build to WrestleMania.
Definitely, definitely. Okay, more tag team action now, as Primo and Epico were defeated by the team of Santino Marella and Zack Ryder.
Yeah, bit of a short tag team match, kind of uneventful, from the team that are now calling themselves Team Cobro, Marella and Zack Ryder. Primo and Epico seem to be working as heels in this match. They turned babyface without kind of really turning, back when Abraham Washington, when he was still with WWE, turned his back on them to join with Titus O'Neil and Darren Young, the primetime players. But it seems now that Primo and Epico are kind of just coming back in as heels, which I think is a good thing, because, you know, apart from the primetime players, there aren't really any heel tag teams, and of course Team Rhodes Scholars. But there's quite a few babyface tag teams at the moment, so it's I think it's good to bulk up the heels, especially when Primo and Epico don't really kind of have, you know, characters in a sense. You know, I think they do work much better as a heel tag team, and they've got Rosa Mendez with them. But I think there's talk of breaking her away from Primo and Epico, and I think she's gonna wind up doing something with Alberto Del Rio. At least that's what they've been teasing on Raw. But it's good to see, you know, a tag team match that kind of has somewhat meaning to it, because, you know, as we have discussed in the last few weeks, the tag team division is getting stronger. And it's a Triple H initiative, reportedly, which is a good thing, because, you know, as we said, the tag team division has been very lackluster for many, many, many years.
Well, it's been non-existent, really, isn't it? For years now, tag team wrestling, especially in, you know, WWE, they've really really overlooked it, but it looks like it's come back a bit stronger.
Yeah, I think really the Hardys, Dudleys, and Edge and Christian, I think that was really the sort of final year of tag team. Those couple of years, I guess 2001 really was the final sort of the final year for tag team wrestling in WWE, you know, where it actually meant something.
Yeah. Okay, following a strong tag team lineup this week was another tag team match featuring Divas. Layla and Kaitlyn defeated the current Divas champion Eve and Alexana.
Yeah, not as quite a memorable match as the Primo and Epico Team Cobra one, and the Divas tag team matches aren't quite as noteworthy. Yeah, this was just highly, highly, highly forgettable tag team match. Yeah, what else is there to say, really? I mean, you know, let's just see who ends up challenging for the title at Survivor Series.
We mentioned him earlier, Miz. He was defeated via a bro kick by Sheamus this week.
Yep, Sheamus still being booked very strongly, and the bro kick is still basically the new pedigree, defeating everyone left, right and centre. Except for the Big Show, of course. And we are going to see the Big Show and Sheamus match up again at Survivor Series, which we'll focus on in a few moments. This was a good match. I believe this was somewhere during the second hour, which is when they usually give a sort of main event caliber matchup, and they let it go long as well, which is good. Obviously, you know, they have the time to do it now. They've got the 3 hours. But since Raw has been going to 3 hours, although the shows, you know, they've most of the time they really have felt like 3 hours, and it is just too long. We have been getting actually much better wrestling, which is a good thing when you're watching a pro wrestling show.
Definitely. This week also we actually got an explanation out of referee Brad Maddox as to why he did what he did at Hell in a Cell. And also Mr. McMahon this week suggested they sort of forced Vicky Guerrero into making a triple threat match for the WWE title at Survivor Series.
Yes, as we said, the landscape of Survivor Series changed dramatically this week, and Vince McMahon made a surprise appearance. Basically, like you said, forced Vicky Guerrero to book a triple threat match for the WWE Championship and completely changed the tag team match. So now CM Punk defends against John Cena and Ryback in the three-way, and Brad Maddox said basically he wants to be a WWE superstar. He says the WWE have shut all the doors on him. The only way that, you know, they offered him a developmental deal, but said that basically that he would never be, you know, sent up, called up to the main roster. And then they offered him a position as a referee, but he wants to be a WWE superstar. So basically Vince McMahon came out and said that he will offer Brad Maddox a contract if he can defeat Ryback next week on Raw. Yeah. And he would give him $1 million contract. So I guess the question is, you know, do you think Brad Maddox is going to win that match?
Well, there's more to it, isn't there? There's much more to it than meets the eye. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, on paper, no, he shouldn't win, should he? But you know, there's always been something up the sleeve, especially with the you know, the alliance between CM Punk and Paul Heyman and him. I'm sure there'd be much more to this story.
Yeah, I think that you know. Brad Maddox in the storyline claims that he has nothing to do with Paul Heyman and Punk, and that he acted on his own. I think that, you know, I can't see Brad Maddox losing. Otherwise, what the hell is the point of this?
Yeah, if he come out this week and you know, take him airtime to say this, I think, you know, it wouldn't be, you know, worth doing otherwise. There's still going to be, you know, more to it. So.
Yeah, so I'm sure he's going to get the contract, and then, you know, who knows. I'm sure it will come to light then that he actually is involved with Punk and Heyman, and that in that, you know, that's how he's going to win, because obviously they need a good excuse for him to win. And the only downside of this is, you know, that means it's another defeat for Ryback. And like we said, you know, we don't, you know, the thing about giving that defeat to Ryback is that you don't want to follow it up with, you know, loss after loss, especially to some guy who's not even on the roster, you know, in storyline.
That's right.
Because, you know, again, referencing Goldberg, as we did a few weeks ago, once his undefeated streak was broken, his career rapidly went downhill in WCW.
That's right. Okay, continuing on the tag team theme, both the WWE Tag Team Champions were in action this week, but in singles competition, Kane defeated Damian Sandow, whereas Cody Rhodes actually defeated Daniel Bryan.
Yes, and it was quite disappointing, actually, because, you know, Cody Rhodes and Daniel Bryan was a good matchup on paper. And the crowd, I mean, you know, we can attest to this when, you know, before the yeses were noes, the chants in Birmingham were very much yeses for Daniel Bryan. And we were at the Raw taping in November in London, and the crowd went absolutely crazy for Daniel Bryan. and they went crazy for him again this week on Raw. He got such a huge ovation, the biggest reaction of the entire night, and then he was defeated in literally 2 minutes by Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, but, you know, see that really. I mean, I'd rather have seen a tag team match, wouldn't you? Rather have, you know...
Yeah, well, they seem to be holding off on the tag team match until next week, because that's the main event for WWE main event next Wednesday. Of course, it's taped on the Tuesday, but it, seeing Daniel Bryan defeated really deflated the crowd. And then instead, Damian Sandow and Kane had a match after the commercial break, and they went like 5 minutes in a very, very, very uneventful match. So, you know, kind of, it was disappointing that they didn't get longer than just 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as also, if they're, you know, if they're wrestling next week anyway, and people know they're wrestling next week and they're going to see that match, they could have used those two matches to maybe give someone else a chance on the roster. You know, give someone else some TV time and try and get them over. Rather than seeing, you know, four guys go at it, even though it's in singles terms, but we're going to see them go out next week anyway.
Yeah, I don't think this, you know, to build a tag team match next Wednesday, I don't think these two singles matches really did anything to build. They could have just ended up doing a segment or some sort of, you know, running or something, and it would have come off better than this. I think this was as bad, you know, there wasn't too much logic in this. There could have been a lot of logic if they, you know, on paper, but they just didn't execute them at all well.
Okay, mention on Raw, and we've had a question about this tonight, which we'll go into later, regarding storylines about what is too much and, you know, what is going on over the top with realism. Vicky Guerrero this week has tried to present further evidence of John Cena and AJ's inappropriate relationship. Not really over keen on this storyline, because I think it's you know, it's been done before. You know, certainly TNA tried to do it recently, but we'll talk about that later. You know, I'm not really a fan of this storyline, you?
No, not particularly. I mean, it's just a very kind of, you know, it's a very, very watered down storyline. You know, they can't, you know, they can only suggest things very mildly anyway.
Yeah, the PG ratings.
Yeah, and, you know, the whole, you know, this is basically the same as the Claire Lynch thing in TNA, except, you know, some terrible actress hasn't come out with saying she was a junkie or something, which obviously clearly isn't going to happen here. But like the Claire Lynch storyline, this is just very, you know, it's not an engaging and interesting storyline. It's obvious how it's going to unfold, I think. But, you know, I kind of like the way Vicky Guerrero. I mean, with her over the top cackle and everything, I think she's quite good.
Yeah, she's certainly a good heel. Okay, that was this week's roundup of WWE Raw, which was from Birmingham, England. Let's have a look at the preview of the Survivor Series, which is coming on November the 18th, 2012. That's going to be from the Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis, Indiana. It's three matches built at the moment, isn't there? The first one is now Team Ziggler, as we alluded to earlier, which is obviously Dolph Ziggler, Team Rhodes Scholars, which is Damian Sandow and Cody Rhodes, with Wade Barrett and Alberto Del Rio, against Team Foley, which is Kofi Kingston, Team Hell No, which is Kane and Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton, and one more superstar to be announced. The second is The Big Show, who's defending his championship against Sheamus. And the third one is CM Punk, who's defending his WWE championship against Ryback and John Cena. So, three good matches there. I mean, obviously, you know, surely they're going to put some more matches on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's obviously a very small card.
Yeah, but it just shows you that, you know, there is literally only one more episode of Raw and SmackDown. Although, you know, Raw, of course, is the, you know, it's the A show more than ever now, because, you know, because there is no brand split effectively anymore.
I definitely really wonder with, you know, the matches, you know, only the three matches at the moment, and they obviously going to have to put some more in beforehand, with only sort of one more week of TV time to go. Does make you wonder whether the writers, this is down to the fact that they just haven't got, you know, they are writing literally day to day, and they haven't got the storylines in the bank anymore that they used to. And they probably had, you know, they probably knew sort of 4 months down the road what they were going to be doing. But now that perhaps they don't know from one week to the next.
No, I don't. You know, before, you know, like you said, these storylines would last for like 6 months to even a year. You know, this is years ago in wrestling. Now, the you know, the writers really don't have any long term. You know, I think they've got, you know, they've got the Royal Rumble planned out, you know, Punk versus The Rock, I'm sure. WrestleMania, I'm sure they've got the big kind of four matches set up.
There's a Survivor Series match here, and then there's one more pay-per-view, isn't there, before the end of the year, which is TLC. And once that's done, then that's really, you know, the storyline, they're trying, you know, put everything to bed by the end of the year, because you've got the Royal Rumble coming, WrestleMania, and they try and focus on the storyline for WrestleMania.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, evident more than anything about how the writers, you know, are basically, you know, things are changing day to day, is the fact that the entire card has basically changed. You know, we have a Triple Threat Championship match now, which we didn't have until Raw, and the Survivor Series Tag Team match, the traditional match, has changed, and there's still one person to be announced on that. Just goes to show you, I mean, from what I've heard, the decision was made on Friday to basically change the matches. 2 days later is when, you know, Raw went live, and these decisions, you know, came into effect. But, you know, hopefully they're not going to change anything again when Raw returns on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, there's always things that you can't legislate for. I mean, such as injuries to wrestlers, breaches of the wellness policy as well. But this doesn't seem to be the case at the moment. It just seems to be a change in direction. Okay, that was our preview for Survivor Series. We should be reviewing that on next show as well. And we'd love to hear what your thoughts of the show and what you thought about it. You can, of course, send your letters and questions to
hottagmailbag@yahoo.com.
We're also on Facebook. Just type in Hot Tag on Facebook and you'll find us, and just post us any questions or thoughts or PM us on there, and we'll, you know, try and answer them for you. Okay, should we look at the TNA this week?
Yep, it was the Turning Point Go Home show. Turning Point, of course, is tonight on pay-per-view. It's an 8-match card.
Right, tonight you've got Jeff Hardy defending his championship versus Austin Aries, and that'll be a ladder match. That's quite an interesting one. I mean, we've seen quite a few of these matches recently, Austin Aries versus Jeff Hardy. You know, but at least this one, you know, is slightly different in the fact that it's got the ladder in it, you know, so it should be a bit more interesting than the others.
Yeah, well, Jeff Hardy and Austin Aries has got his TNA World Championship, and Jeff Hardy's got his sort of custom-made belt. So Austin Aries has stolen the old TNA belt.
Yeah.
I still think Austin is a pretty, you know, I don't believe him in the championship picture. I don't think he's believable, as we've, you know, discussed before, when he had the championship around his waist. I'm sure this will be a good match. I mean, they had a good match at Bound for Glory, with the ladder match stipulation there. I'm sure, you know, as two, you know, high flyers themselves, I think this is going to be a good match. Of course, you know, Jeff Hardy, you know, the master of the ladder match, if you want to call him that. So I think this, you know, has a lot of potential to be a, you know, match of the night, really, I think.
Just hope, really, that from all Jeff Hardy's point of view than Austin Aries, is Jeff Hardy's obviously been at WrestleMania, he's been in front of huge crowds, live crowds, and also, you know, on telly across the, you know, millions of people across the world. You just hope that he's in the right frame of mind, in that he can, you know, do against the same guy another match, but try and make it more innovative. Because you might think if you're wrestling someone in a, you know, you know, a small arena, not as big an audience, you know, sometimes can be a bit, as professional can sometimes, you know, be a bit, you know, you can maybe become a bit lackadaisical. But hopefully, they'll keep it going. Also, on the championship theme, the World Tag Team Championships of the World is up for grabs. The current champions, Charlo Guerrero and Hernandez, are giving another chance to Christopher Daniels and Kazarian.
Yeah, well, we are seeing these two tag teams against each other for the first time with the titles on the line. Obviously, this is the direction they're moving in now after Kurt Angle and AJ Styles have gone their separate ways. I still think it made them look a bit weak, Styles and Kurt Angle, when they didn't win the titles again at Bound for Glory, because they had opportunity after opportunity and they kept losing. So you thought, okay, well, eventually, as the babyface tag team, they're going to get the gold. But that wasn't the case, and Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez won at Bound for Glory, and AJ Styles and Kurt Angle went their separate ways. So I don't think it was a very positive end to their tag team. I do think it made them look a bit weak. But AJ Styles, of course, is possibly going to be inserted into the World Championship picture in a three-way match.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's AJ Styles versus James Storm versus Bobby Roode, which you know put one of them inserted in the title picture. But interesting stipulation here: the winner, the wrestler who gets pinned, will not receive another TNA title shot until Bound for Glory next year. But you know, this is a bit funny one here because it says the wrestler who gets pinned. Well, does that include submission or a count out? Because I'm presuming you can, be counted out in this match.
I think in recent years they've kind of got rid of the count out thing and disqualification. I think it's anything goes in this one.
Anything goes there. Okay, well, that would get rid of those theories. But I presume this means pinned or submission will receive a shot for the heavyweight title until Bound for Glory. See, we've only just finished Bound for Glory and we're talking about it already.
Yeah, we mentioned that they're probably going to start the Bound for Glory series, but obviously there is already a mention of next year's Bound for Glory. I guess the person, if they are going to do another Bound for Glory series next year, I guess whoever doesn't lose its match, the two losers can't be in the Bound for Glory series. But it's interesting because, the fact that wrestling in professional wrestling booking, in the present landscape of the industry is basically, at least with TNA and WWE, is literally all over the place. Whoever wins this match, and I genuinely don't know who is going to win, which I guess is a good thing. I don't think it's predictable, which is always good. Are they actually going to keep to that? Are they going to run out of ideas and think, okay, well, AJ Styles won that match, at Turning Point 2012. Actually, we think Bobby Roode is the natural fit. Are they going to think of some crazy angle to make Bobby Roode, maybe Bobby Roode threatens Hogan or something in 3 months' time and ends up with a championship shot? Are they actually going to stick to the stipulation?
Who knows with TNA? Who knows? Another piece of gold up for grabs is the TNA television title. Of course, the holder, Samoa Joe, is against Magnus. Quite an interesting one. See these two go at it. Both, quite technical, especially Samoa Joe, the submission machine. So, I can't really pick at the moment who I think is gonna come on top there. But that should be quite interesting. Just a normal singles match here between Kurt Angle and Devon. Obviously, Devon disappeared for quite a while, but came back with vengeance. Probably Kurt Angle for that one, I'd say.
There are two matches on the card involving the Aces and Eights, so they have to be victorious in at least one of them, because obviously this storyline is going to continue with the Aces and Eights versus TNA. I don't know, I would be more inclined to say Devon will win, just because he's the kind of, although he has been revealed that he isn't the leader of Aces and Eights, he's certainly the at least as he's unmasked, he's the main figurehead at the moment when the so-called president of the Aces and Eights isn't around. So I would assume that Devon is going to win this one, but I'm sure the other Aces and Eights are going to get involved. And maybe we'll see another unmasking since it's a pay-per-view. Not sure how this one's going to turn out with Devon and Kurt Angle.
No. Okay, the X Division Championship is up for grab. The champion Rob Van Dam is against Joe Ryan.
Joe Ryan's certainly been inserted into the championship picture very quickly. Rob Van Dam's only held the championship since Bound for Glory when he defeated Zema Ion, but he really didn't need the championship. They it was clear that TNA absolutely had no idea what to do with Rob Van Dam, so they just thought, okay, we'll just give him the title. Joe Ryan's been, he's been built up pretty quickly. He's got Matt Morgan in his corner, of course, who's doing a storyline with Hulk Hogan at the moment. So I would imagine that Joe Ryan is going to go over with the help of Matt Morgan here, just basically since they have no idea what to do with Rob Van Dam, and they have something with Joey Ryan and Matt Morgan at the moment. So I would assume that Ryan is going to win, but with Matt Morgan's help.
Okay, the seventh match on the card is probably going to add a bit of comedy to the evening. It's a mixed tag team match, and it's going to be ODB and Eric Young against the team of Tara and Jesse. So it's you know, the token females in there, and it's probably going to be a few comedy angles in there, ODB and Eric Young.
Yeah, well, Jesse Godders, I think, or I think it's that's his surname, from Big Brother in the States, teaming up with his girlfriend Tara against ODB and Eric Young, who are the ODB and Eric Young are actually the Knockouts tag team champions, but I think everyone's forgotten that because I don't believe they've defended the title since April. So it shows you what complete the utter pointlessness of even creating those titles.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think they're just going to go away, to be honest, those titles, unless Tara and Jesse win them, which I wouldn't be surprised to happen. But then again, I guess I'm surprised that the titles aren't actually on the line in this match, even though they're not technically knockouts. But then again, ODB and Eric Young aren't knockouts.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with TNA, they may obviously bring in these so-called celebrities. It's, you know, Jesse from Big Brother. I mean, I think celebrities in wrestling are okay on the peripheral. On the outside of things, adding to the a show such as obviously WrestleMania was littered with celebrities, but none of them got in the ring. And also with Mickey Rourke at WrestleMania a couple of years back, you know, they had him on the edge of things. He wasn't really majorly involved. He just had like a little feud with Chris Jericho. But you know, anytime you put a wrestler, a non-wrestler celebrity in the ring, and you give them the belts, it's bad news. It's like with WCW and David Arquette. You know, David Arquette, wonderful guy, great actor, but you know, it killed the title. It killed WCW world title, and not that the Knockouts tag team match means, you know, belt means a particular amount. I shouldn't have think, you know, if they do end up winning it, then that you might as well throw it in the garbage.
You might as well throw it in the garbage now, to be honest.
Definitely. Okay, the final match on the card is the Director of Chaos versus Joseph Park. Again, a bit of comedy there. Joseph Park, but will we see Abyss?
The whole Abyss thing seems to have been put to bed in recent memory, and obviously, you know, eventually it's going to come to light that Joseph Park is Abyss. I think that the last time was when Abyss hit Joseph Park hit the Black Hole Slam on, I think it was Bully Ray, when they were having their feud, and that was the last time we saw Abyss.
Makes you wonder whether Joseph Parks may be put into bed himself a bit, because he might think that now he's a bit more involved in the storyline as such, and you know, in that he can talk and he can be more of a bit more of a personality rather than just a big wrestler that doesn't really talk very much. So perhaps he sort of thought, you know, even though Joseph Park might be a bit of a silly role as such, he might think he's getting a bit more, you know, communication time, a bit more time on the shtick.
But I think he's pretty good at that character, Joseph Park. He is good on the mic. He does a good job of conveying that character, being, you know, basically the complete opposite of Abyss. It's a real 180, you know, turn in terms of character. So you know, how much of Abyss are we going to see in this match against the DOC, the Director of Chaos from Aces and Eights, who was the latest member to be unmasked, who turned out to be Luke Gallows and Festus of WWE fame.
Yeah, how the mighty have fallen. Okay, we're going to go to the mailbag now. I'll ask some questions from you. The first one is from Dave Martin, and he says, what do you think of the modern-day storylines, and do you think the wrestling is trying to incorporate too much realism into them, like certain taboos? We touched this earlier with the John Cena AJ storyline, which we said, but we both agreed it was a little bit silly. Yes, I do think there is too much realism. I'm going to go back to the stupid, I think, angle between AJ Styles and Dixie Carter, which was the what's her name again? The druggie who they were trying to help.
I said her name earlier, didn't I? I've completely forgotten.
Yeah. Anyway, that's really important. They were trying to help her, and then all of a sudden she tried to say that AJ was the father of an unborn child. I didn't like that, because I mean, AJ Styles, obviously, was, they asked him if he was comfortable, and obviously he was comfortable, but you know, he's got a wife and he's got three kids, and I do think that was a very nice story. in such, I think the character of Vicky Guerrero is a good character, but I didn't really like her with the being the cougar as style as much, because of obviously her relationship with Eddie Guerrero's wife. I didn't like that too much. I think there is too much realism in wrestling. I know that people such as Vince Russo think that you do need it to be up to date, and everything that's going on in the world bad needs to be put in wrestling as well. But I think that people listen to wrestling to escape. I mean, if you're buying a wrestling ticket and you're paying your $25-$30 or whatever it is to go to the arena, we all know wrestling's not real. We all know wrestling's a choreographed storylines, and it hurts. But we go to forget. We go to watch it for 3 hours and just forget about everything else. And it's sort of suspended disbelief. We don't want to believe that it's not real. We want to get lost in the storylines. But I think if you make it too realistic and too up to date, then where's the barrier? Where's the escape? From it.
Yeah, I think that. Well, the thing with writing professional wrestling in a sense is that I think the day's gone and passed for the sort of classic storylines, because audiences have changed so much, and television has changed so much. It's changing all the time. It's ever changing. So things, very kind of basic storylines, which they used to do, way back when, are fine for the times when wrestling was a very different. But for today, I think you do need this kind of element of realism in them. Obviously they're always trying to convey the realism, always anyway. But in terms of like stuff like having affairs and everything else, as long as it's written well, which is actually rarely the case, unfortunately, I have no personal problem with any content in a wrestling show. But like I said, it has to be written well, because I think you do need to be up to date. You do need to be drawing inspiration from what's happening in the world. Just like any form of entertainment, really. I mean, like I've said, wrestling is a product. It's a television show. It's the drama of storylines and angles mixed with the action in the ring. And I do think you need things like that to keep you engaged and hooked. It's like any television show, really, and any film. I mean, there is the whole escapism thing, of course, but I mean, that's the same as with films. I mean, you can go into a horror film to escape the horrors of reality, and you'll go into a safe environment, be it your living room or a cinema, to escape, whatever's happening in your life for 2 hours while you watch a film.
I just think that if there's so much bad news in the world now, you put on the TV and go to the news channel, there is no good news anymore. There is always talk about wars and death and famine, and there's all this terrible bad news in the world. So when I want to watch wrestling, I don't want to hear about who's been sleeping with whose wife, or who's having an affair, or who's doing this, or who's screwing who. It's not just for the fact that it's maybe not suitable for the younger generation, for the kids. It's just the fact that it's just not positive. I mean, if you've got two guys that in the storyline are chalk and cheese, you've got a guy that's a white meat baby face, and you've got a guy that is the epitome of a bad guy, there's a clash there. And if one of them, you could have really two guys walking up a corridor, and one walks into the other one by mistake, and they have a punch up and a feud. That could set up a feud. You don't have to have one guy sleeping with another guy's wife, or like with Lita and Edge and Matt Hardy. WWE absolutely jumped on that, because obviously it's a real life issue, but they jumped on it and made money out of it. And obviously they were clever to do that, but for me, that's just it's just uninspiring. I'd just rather watch people go at it, and to know that people have a feud going without all the extra bits. I mean, they never used to have to do things like this. I mean, to get people want to watch a fight, there was basically a contrast of characters. I know wrestling's the characters have died. Basically, you had a good guy and a bad guy,
and they didn't like each other, and they would settle it in the ring, and that would be then normally that would be the end of the feud. You have a feud, and then it'd be finished off with a big match, a big main event, and then they move on to the next thing, which I personally think that was a lot better.
Well, like I said, I think, you know, just the landscape of professional wrestling has changed, and television in general has changed so much. So I think stuff like that doesn't fly as well today, because people have seen it before, and they want more, simply because they can see stuff like that. You know, they can see stuff like that, you know, 10 years ago on TV. Television has changed so much, and the content has changed so much, and you can see so much, I guess, harder, edgier TV now. Earlier in the day or whatever, for example, you know, that I think people are just not content with seeing stuff like that because I think it's maybe perhaps boring or tedious.
And I mean, sorry to interrupt you, I mean, I don't want to go into the whole subject of PG and what's taboo and what you can't see, because I think if it's an adult theme, then as long as it's done in adult, you know, in the evening, I mean, that's okay. I'm a fan. I mean, I hate it when they show it, the wrestling in the afternoon, and it's they always hide the chair shots and they don't show the blood. I mean, to me, that's, you know, it's, if it's wrestling or fighting, whatever we want to call it, they should be able to show that. But I mean, I saw the new Bond film a few days ago, the 007 Skyfall, and that was a 12A. In England, that's a 12A film, which means that you can watch it, you know, as you're 12 years old or older, accompanied by an adult. Now, the F word was used in that twice, and the SH word was used in that several times. Now, for me, for a 12 year old to hear those words, it's disgusting. I mean, I certainly wouldn't take my 12, if I had a 12, I've got kids, but they're not that old, but if they were that old and I heard that, I would be disgusting, I'd be complaining. And I think it's the same as some of the storylines, in that they're too old for kids. I mean, kids will maybe say this John Cena storyline, they're trying to keep it real because this thing does happen, but kids, you know, 12 year old kid, say, mum, dad, what does this mean, what are they trying to say John Cena's doing? And I don't think kids that age should know about this sort of thing, which is why I disagree with, you know, some of the storylines.
Yeah, I guess, you know, well, wrestling is a universal product, really. So, there, you know, I guess there is the dilemma of, you know, at least in this day and age, and, you know, like I said, don't want to dwell too much on, like, ratings and PG and everything, because I think people put way too much blame on PG anyway. You know, every possible thing that people don't like with wrestling, they blame PG, even though the PG rating actually accounts for very, very little if you know anything about television ratings and certification. But, you know, the dilemma there, of course, is, you know, wrestling is a universal product despite the rating. Where do you blur the lines between what you can, you know, because it comes down to taste, really, and taste is always different for anybody. You know, one person's good taste is another person's bad taste.
Okay, continuing on the theme of PG and ratings and evocative storylines, let's move on to our next question, which is from Don Bendel, and he says, what are your thoughts on the constant resurrections of ECW? Well, you've got to remember that's, first of all, a compliment to ECW, because they were a fantastic brand, it was a fantastic TV show, and just a great product. Many people, I think the people who you know, moan about ECW probably didn't watch it enough and probably didn't appreciate it for what it really was. I mean, yes, it was ultra violent, yes, it was maybe unique in many ways, but it was actually, if you looked at the product, they had everything on that show. They were the first show to really introduce Lucha Libre style into the United States and across the Western world. It was the father to people like Rey Mysterio, Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit. It really highlighted Eddie Guerrero, really highlighted them to the United States wrestling audience. And that is why, to this day, you are going to have people trying to resurrect it and trying to copy it. But that is, you know, only a compliment to it. You know, WWE obviously brought ECW out, and they had their own sort of version of it, which, you know, was nothing really like original ECW. Obviously production values were much greater on it, and the arenas were more glitzier and the lights and everything, but the product was not really ECW. You've had people like Shane Douglas try and resurrect it. What's the name of the show?
I think the names change per show, but I think it always keeps Extreme as the
Extreme Uprising, was it?
As the prefix. I think it's the first one was Extreme Reunion. I think the next one was Extreme Rising, and then it's Extreme, you know, something else. But
that's right.
He's running it every couple of months now. His sort of version of ECW.
TNA, didn't they? TNA tried to re-raise it as well, wasn't there? What was it called, their show?
Hardcore Justice. Yeah, they renamed Hard Justice Hardcore Justice for their own ECW show, which was pretty horrendous. Pretty horrendous show, that one. And you know, TNA have had their fair share of ECW, you know, former ECW talents on the show. I remember in it from 2002 to about 2004, they kept running. They had sort of like an ECW contingent in there, which they, you know, they used to have some hardcore matches and everything. And Raven, of course, would later become the TNA World Heavyweight Champion, as would Rhino. But the thing with continuously resurrecting it and the themes of ECW is just basically flogging a dead horse. I mean, ECW existed, okay, it no longer exists, despite the WWE ECW brand, you know, that wasn't ECW. ECW died in 2001, and you know, it's gonna remain dead. But I think to completely, you know, resurrect it, like you said, is a compliment and a testament to the power of ECW and the effect it's had on wrestling and the lineage of that company. And you know, think of all the great stars who came out. You know, you named many people. You know, other names like Chris Jericho as well, and people like Sabu, who's, you know, synonymous with hardcore wrestling.
Taz, Tommy Dreamer, yeah, exactly. Raven, Bulls Mahoney, Chris Candido was in there. Again, a lot of older stars. I mean, people like Terry Funk have helped it. You know, obviously fought a lot of the products and helped it along the way. I mean, I wouldn't be so sure that they can't quite resurrect it. I mean, I think it's, you know, WWE ECW is sort of dead because it's such a bad, you know, recreation of it. But at the moment, Tommy Dreamer is being aided by Rob Feinstein, and they've come up with House of Hardcore, which, what I've heard about it, has been an excellent product, a fantastic talent, and it really does have that ECW feel to it. I mean, I was never lucky enough to go to an ECW live event, but from the ones I hear on my friends on Facebook, they tell me that it's a fantastic, fantastic show. And that it's, you know, it's bringing as much of ECW back as possibly you can do. I mean, the thing of ECW, the people that try and copy it, they try and get some wrestlers, you know, include some of them may have been in ECW, but they think that if they can throw them some Singapore, you know, canes in the ring and some garbage cans, and they think that if they, you know, put those in the ring, that can recreate ECW. But there's a lot more to ECW than just, you know, weapons and violence. You know, it's it was a product as a whole, and everyone was there for each other. And you know, you had one thing that, you know, the others didn't have behind them. That was Paul Heyman, and obviously he was the innovator behind it when he took over from Todd Gordon, created the Extreme Championship Wrestling from Eastern Championship Wrestling. So you'll never have that back, but there's certainly enough remnants of the old ECW crew to put together a show like House of Hardcore. That people can still, you know, you can go there and you can legitimately chart ECW, and everyone can appreciate it.
Well, certainly no one knows ECW and lived and breathed ECW as, you know, as much as Tommy Dreamer. You know, if he does manage to create something, you know, if the intention is to do something, you know, ECW-esque, and he's succeeding, then obviously, you know, more power to him. But I think ECW was very much a product of its time, and you just can't. You can't recreate that today, because, you know, it was ECW brought something to professional wrestling that no one had seen in America before. You know, that kind of extreme hardcore wrestling was only sort of seen really in like Japan at the time. And of course, you mentioned the Lucha Libre stuff and you know, the various themes of that show, you know, would later, you know, shape the Attitude Era. because WWE, of course, you know, that people can, you know, a lot of people consider, you know, the Attitude Era to be the greatest ever few years in wrestling, and that can be attributed to ECW, you know, from the foundations, because that's what inspired WWE to make that move and change, you know, to change their product so dramatically, basically overnight, essentially. But you know, in terms of trying to resurrect it, you really should just leave it alone, I think. You know, TNA didn't do a good job of it. Shane Douglas certainly hasn't done a good job of it. You know, just let it go and try and make your own company without trying to live up to the past and you know, stop living in the shadow of ECW, I think.
Okay, last question this week, and this is from our favourite contributor. This is Chris Lappin. Chris, thank you very much. You always send your questions every week, and we're happy to answer them. He says, well, it's a two-part question here. He says, would you and the listeners like to see a traditional Survivor Series match featuring the top five faces versus the top five heels from NXT, and maybe have the survivors get WWE contracts? Sorry, NXT, sorry. Maybe have the survivors get WWE contracts. I was also excited to see some new talent. And another match I would like to see is a three man band versus WWF legends Vader, DDP, and Psycho Sid. He's put probably be a 2 minute squash match. And that's again from Chris Lappin. Well, Chris, that's a two part question. The first one: would you like to see top five faces versus top five heels from NXT, NXT? No, to be quite honest with you, I wouldn't. I think if you have a major event like Survivor Series, a major pay-per-view, and Survivor Series was obviously called one of the original, one of the big four, original four, I think that you need to have your top talent taking all the available positions there. I mean, I love the five versus five matches. I think that every match personally should be five versus five, maybe apart from one heavyweight title match. But Survivor Series, that's what it always used to be. You know, just the four versus four or five versus five. That's my personal opinion. And I think, you know, the people on the NXT roster need to really earn their stripes before they enter a main event like that. So that's my answer to that. I mean that was also to the listeners as well. So if you're a listener listening to this, you know, please send us your opinions, because we obviously do want to speak to you as well. The second part of your question: would I like to see the three man band versus Vader, DDP, and Sid? Yes, I probably would. And I mean, I wouldn't like to see the three man band. I couldn't really care less about them personally. Any of those guys, I think they're all pretty talentless. But I'd love to see Vader back in the ring, DDP, and also Psycho Sid. I think Sid did quite a good job recently when he beat Heath Slater. That was a squash match. Yeah, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see the three old guys have their way with them, a squash match. So yes, I would like to see that. Your opinions, Adam?
In terms of the Survivor Series tag team match with two teams from NXT, no, I wouldn't want to see that, because basically, I really enjoy NXT. I watch it every week. I really enjoy the product, but I don't think they should kind of WWE's done a good job of basically making NXT feel like a separate company in a sense. You know, it does have you know, bona fide WWE superstars that appear, people like Tyson Kidd and Michael McGillicuddy, but basically, you know, superstars who WWE doesn't really know what to do with at the moment. So, you know, they're getting TV time on NXT, and they have been there from the beginning, which is good. But I like, at the moment, I like NXT being its kind of this separate entity, and I wouldn't want to see the lines blurred between NXT and a WWE pay-per-view at this time. And especially with the stipulation of the winners getting WWE contracts, I wouldn't want to see that either at the moment, because I don't think that it's time to kind of put any NXT superstars to the main roster at the moment. Not because they're not good enough, but in terms of, you know, losing talent from the NXT roster just to put them on the main roster. I mean, you know, that would have a pretty damning effect on the NXT roster if five superstars suddenly, you know, got contracts and moved over to Raw and SmackDown. So I personally wouldn't want to see that match, just because, you know, I like things as they are at the moment on NXT. I like the way things are going, and I wouldn't want to see the lines blurred. But definitely for the future, I would be happy to see that match. You know, but this is, you know, say in a year's time or something, or indeed a five versus five tag team match on NXT. You know, I would be absolutely fine with that. But at the moment, I like NXT. I kind of think of NXT as a separate entity, and I enjoy watching it without thinking it's kind of the WWE product in a sense. I think it really comes off as its own show and its own brand, and that's the way I like my NXT at present.
What do you think of the Legends idea Chris had? Against a three-man band.
Well, I think the note you put at the end there, Chris, about it being a two-minute squash, that would probably be the best thing for it. I mean, you know, DDP hasn't been in the ring for a good few years now. I mean, he's doing very well with his DDP yoga. I've forgotten the exact name.
YRG, so it's actually the YRG he does. So obviously he's tremendously fit still. It's always nice to them when they do bring the old guys back in. I mean, Sid looked tremendous when I saw him. He, you know, a fantastic physique, and he wasn't blown up, and you know, he did the powerbomb, which everyone wanted to see. Again, I mean, Sid Justice, or Psycho Sid, whatever you want to call him, Sid Uni, his real name. You know, again, he wasn't the most exciting wrestler ever throughout his career. But it's always nice to see those guys. I mean, Vader, nice to see him. Obviously, he's getting on with me now. But, the three-man band, I suppose, it, you know, they're not very exciting, are they?
No, and, you know, like I said, DDP hasn't been in the ring for a long time. I'm sure he'd still be good because, like you said, he's probably in, with the yoga, he's probably in the best shape he's been in for years, probably. Sid Vicious at the moment is I believe he's still taking, you know, bookings on the indie scene, and Vader's wrestling all the time still. And actually, I think out of all the legends who competed in the Raw 1000 shows, you know, building up to Raw 1000, I think Vader did the best by quite a long way. I mean, he had the longest match, and he certainly, I think he looked the happiest to be back, you know, on Raw, because obviously the last time we saw him on Raw, I think that was the time when he fell over a couple of times.
Yeah.
When he was, I think he was, you know, tremendously overweight when he came back. But he seems to have dropped a lot of weight, and he's still working in the ring. And of course, his son is in NXT, Jake Carter. So it'd be interesting to see what you know, his potential.
Yeah, when you think, obviously, with any second generation star, they've got a chance, you know, ability wise. So we'll see what happens. Okay, we've got a competition for you this week, and this is for PS3 owners, so listen up. This competition this week is for a copy of WWE 13 on the PlayStation 3. Okay, so if you've got an Xbox, I'm afraid you need not apply. Okay, the question is, what was the name of the infamous turkey who hatched out of the Survivor Series 1990? What was the name of the infamous turkey who hatched at Survivor Series 1990? Was it A, the Gobbledygooker, B, Corporal Cluck, or C, the Red Rooster? Was it A, the Gobbledygooker, B, Corporal Cluck, or C, the Red Rooster? And you can send those by private message on our Facebook site. Go to facebook.com, just type in the Hot Tag Podcast, and send us your name and your answer and your details on there. But don't put it on the main page, you know, private message us. Or you can send it to our mailbag, which is at
hottagmailbag@yahoo.com. Just send your answers and your name there, and we'll announce the winner on the next episode.
Okay, our last segment this week is our match of the week, and this is going back to Survivor Series 1991, which was the greatest challenge between The Undertaker and Hulk Hogan. And of course, Hulk Hogan's WWF title was up for grabs. The Undertaker had Paul Bearer in his corner. The Undertaker defeated Hulk Hogan with help from Ric Flair, when Ric Flair put the steel chair in the ring, and Hulk Hogan was Tombstone by The Undertaker onto the chair. Now, actually, I must say it wasn't Tombstone onto the chair, because there's about a foot, Undertaker cocked it up, and there was about a foot difference between Hogan's head and the chair, but you got the idea. Hulk Hogan actually retained the title week after, at Tuesday in Texas. Jack Tunney, the WWF president at the time, demanded a rematch between them, and Hulk Hogan threw ashes into the Undertaker's eyes and rolled him up for the free count. So Undertaker's first title run was very short, but he was the champion. I thought that was an excellent match, actually. I was only 10 years old at the time, and I was desperate to stay up and see it, but my mum wouldn't let me. My mum and dad were rooting for Hulk Hogan, and I was actually rooting for The Undertaker. And we had a little side bet for a bar of chocolate, actually. And I always had to buy my mum a bar of chocolate if Hulk Hogan won, and vice versa if The Undertaker won. And I knew the next morning The Undertaker had one, because when I opened my lunchbox at school, I had a Mars bar in there, so I was very happy with that. But well, I did see the match the next day on tape. It was excellent. I mean, seeing these two huge Goliaths of wrestling go at it, and the match and everything, The Undertaker, you know, did his own trademark flying clothesline, walking the ropes. Hulk Hogan made his comeback and hulked up, but Ric Flair got involved at the end, and of course that cost Hogan the match. But that was a truly excellent match. Alan, do you have any memories of that match?
Yeah, well, I guess the main memory really is seeing, you know, The Undertaker win the championship just a year into his WWE career. And I think it's a testament to how, you know, impactful that character was right from his debut the previous year at Survivor Series, and just showing you that, you know, if you have a good, you know, like I said before, if you introduced The Undertaker character today, it wouldn't work at all.
No.
Because, you know, times have changed. The character still works today, of course, because people, you know, there's that respect, and obviously he's been around for, you know, for over 20 years now in WWE. Same with the character of Kane, they just wouldn't fly today simply because the times have changed. But at the time, it was something, you know, people had never seen before in wrestling, and it worked.
And people were legitimately scared when their kids were
crying.
Yeah, they were, you know, genuinely scared of The Undertaker. I mean, yes, like you say, he was the dead man. He's still known as the dead man, the Phenom, obviously in different terms today. But I mean, The Undertaker, I've obviously been lucky enough a couple of times to see The Undertaker live. And believe me, there is no greater entrance alive than that Undertaker entrance. It is still spine chilling.
Yeah, the Undertaker character was just such a force, and it just shows you that, you know, we've spent so much time talking about characters, and you're going through the mailbag questions about characters and writing and wrestling. And a character like The Undertaker just shows you what a good character will do. You know, that there is such a... If you have a good, unique character, how far you can run with them.
Yeah, I mean, the character Undertaker, adults were scared of him, even. Kids were terrified of him. When he walked to the ring, kids would look away in horror. I mean, he was 6 foot, you know, 6 foot 10, nearly 330 pounds, and, you know, came in the black... The mystique of Paul Bearer as well added to him. And also, with, you know, with main events before, Hulk Hogan, there was never really any doubt before Hulk Hogan's matches that Hulk Hogan would overcome all and retain his championship. But with this match, you really thought, it was the first time I think Hulk Hogan had been sort of threatened in the way that people thought, well, actually, you know, this Undertaker guy, he doesn't feel pain. Can he be beaten? I don't think he can be beaten. And as the first time you watched it, you thought, you know, Hulk Hogan might lose this. He might actually genuinely lose his match. And I know the match was, you know, Ric Flair cost it, but it was certainly interesting all the way to the end. And that was a fantastic match. And really, I don't think there's been many Survivor Series that could have topped that one, personally. Okay, well, thank you very much for listening, as always, to the show. It's been a pleasure... doing it for you.
And don't forget to check out TNA Wrestling's Turning Point pay-per-view today. And also there is a New Japan Pro Wrestling Eye pay-per-view as well, which I'm really looking forward to watching, a stacked card from top to bottom. So it's a double pay-per-view Sunday today. So I'll be checking out both pay-per-views, and we'll both be doing the same. We'll look forward to watching them. On the next show, which is on November 25th, 2 weeks from today, we're going to be checking out some DVDs that we've just received our copies for from Silver Vision, thanks to them. We've got the new edition of Here Comes the Pain on Blu-ray, the Brock Lesnar DVD. We're also checking out SummerSlam 2012 on DVD and NWO Revolution. So we've got full reviews of those DVD releases on the next edition, again on November 25th.
Okay, thanks always for listening. If you want to send us any questions or pointers or what you do like or don't like about the show, pop onto Facebook at the Hot Tag and send us all your details there. Alternatively, send us your messages to
hottagmailbag@yahoo.com. And as always, thanks to Barry Wilkinson at episode3.co.uk for our fantastic Hot Tag logo.
Take care, and we'll see you next week.